You're listening to episode 253 of Women Worldwide. Do you think it would be difficult to move from left brain, mathematical and logical, to right brain creative? Today's guest made a major move. She pivoted from finance to fashion, and she's here to share how. So stay tuned to learn more. Hi, I'm Deirdre Breckenridge. I've spent an entire career helping women to share stories, nurture relationships, grow their brands, but most of all, to find their voices so they can make a difference. Do you feel stuck? Do you want to power up your own voice? Women Worldwide features the stories of passionate women who have navigated big career challenges and some of the toughest changes. These professionals offer deep insights and advice to inspire you and to help you uncover what's holding you back. Let Women Worldwide ignite your passion so you can excel in life. Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Women Worldwide. Well, what are you looking forward to in 2020, and how are you stepping out of your comfort zone, and maybe what are some of the challenges that you think you might face? Well, that's why Women Worldwide is here, because every week we're delivering an amazing guest who shares a story, the highs, the lows of their journeys, and they are so happy to be offering advice and actionable tips. So if there are ways that we can help you, let us know. We're listening. We're on Twitter. I know some people are emailing me, Deirdre@pureperformance.com with two M's.com. You can also go to YouTube because you can see the show and you can leave comments. You know, our goal, it remains the same. It's to change lives one story at a time. We want you to fuel your passion and power up your own voice. Okay, let's get to today's topic and special guest. So the topic is shifting from a career that's more focused on left brain to right brain and creativity. I have more people contacting me on LinkedIn and even on Twitter DMing me saying that I'm an IT professional and I want to move over into marketing. I've had a couple folks from legal interested in getting into PR. And I've also had people from investment banking moving into fashion. So that's where my special guest comes in today. Joining me on the show is Nora Gardner. And Nora actually started in investment banking at Morgan Stanley. And she made a big pivot into fashion and really discovering and propelling her love for fashion design. Today, she is the founder, CEO, and creative director of Nora Gardner New York. And you know what she's doing? And this is something that women are constantly challenged with. She is creating designs that are practical yet fashionable attire for us in the workplace. So I could say so much about Nora. I think it's time that she shares her journey with you. Nora, it's such a pleasure to have you on my show. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. And it's an honor to be here. And I'm a huge fan of yours. And I think it's so great what you're doing, bringing women together and sharing stories and helping each other out. So
thank you. Yeah. Well, I know your story is going to help a lot of people because it is really interesting. And I did mention, I lined it up that very left brain when you're in, you know, the finance industry and you move over to something that's so creative. And I think that's where, and thank you for saying what you did about being a fan. I really appreciate that. But I think where we can start is what made you decide to make that pivot, that move, that transition, and how did that kind of come about for you?
So it was actually an idea that I had had for years, for a few years while I was working in banking, as I noticed the problem, the challenge that I felt of finding clothes to wear to work. And I've always, I think my main skill set or something that I really am passionate about is problem solving. I've known that about myself for a while. I see something and I always want to get my hands on it and fix it. And so that it was one of the reasons I liked my first career in finance, because it was especially during 2007 is when I started when I entered the Wall Street arena, and there were a lot of problems that needed to be solved there. Every time I see something, I feel like I need to take action. And for the women, you know, in the workplace, it was really a struggle that seemed like this. It shouldn't be so hard to find clothes to get dressed in the morning and to put yourself together. It seemed like the fashion landscape was really set up for men to succeed, and things such as having custom tailors coming to the workplace and measuring them while they were on conference calls, like making it very, very easy. Their pants actually had pockets. Right. It was designed for optimal functionality. And the reality was that women hadn't been in that corporate environment for long enough. So the fashion world hadn't reacted to that and hadn't developed a section of dressing to support professional women. There's evening wear, there's sportswear, you know, there's like lounge wear. There are all these different categories, but professional career is not an expanded, developed enough category for professional women. And I saw that white space, and I really wanted to be involved in the solution.
That's awesome. And, you know, it's something that's so important that we feel good about being in the workplace and having something that, you know, when a lot of entrepreneurs have said, oh, it doesn't matter how you look as long as you feel comfortable. But you know what? It feels good when you can wear something that looks really great in the office when you're going to a meeting or if you need to travel and be somewhere. So I think it's a combination of those things. So how did you, because it definitely takes a different skill set. Are there skills that you developed early in your career that you feel transferred over into fashion and creative fashion design?
Definitely. You know, at the end of the day, it is a business too. You have to really understand your balance sheet, your income statement, where your cash is going. And I had a great foundation. I had an amazing training from my analyst and associate career at Morgan Stanley, and that really helped me build the business. And even with that, it was challenging because it isn't just the numbers. It is creating a product that your customers want to buy and delivering enough newness to them to keep them coming back. So it's that balance of, you know, and I actually had not worked in retail specifically. So that was really interesting learning curve to figure out this particular industry. I had two big advantages. One was that I really understood the customer. I had a very intimate knowledge of who she was, what she needed out of her day to day, that she needed really indestructible fabrics because she's traveling on business trips and she's running through airports and, you know, she needs clothes that are very, very durable. And she needs pockets. She needs a lot of functionality, very specific things, things that don't show sweat marks, clothes that mix and match that can pack well in a suitcase. You know, so having such a clear understanding of who your customer is and what she needs and that a good value proposition for her, I think is everything. And there are a lot of creative geniuses out there that can design really incredible clothing, but if you're not in touch with your market, it won't work. And it also needs to be a product that's actually needed. So I knew that this product was needed because I couldn't find it. I was the first case. And it wasn't just me. It was my colleagues, and I had focus groups and did surveys. And
yeah, I was just going to ask about your research.
So yeah, I can go to my research. I love census.gov website. I'm always pulling forth from there.
That's how I'm feeling.
Yeah. I feel the need to convince myself before I take action. I need to see the numbers, I need to see the market. But I had this advantage of really being the customer that needed the product. So that gave me a huge leg up. And problem solving. So I came to it from much more a technical perspective rather than a creative perspective. But the creative was kind of like the icing on the cake for me. I love design. I love being creative. My in college, I double majored in studio art and also econ. So I have that passion as well. I sketch. I can paint. I draw. I'm not phenomenal, but I like that creative side as well. And my grandmother, I often talk about, was this. My great grandmother was a very talented. Two of them were very talented seamstresses. So we had beautiful clothes in my house growing up. We always had a sewing machine. Right. Yeah. So I made patterns when I was little. So I understood what a pattern was, and I made clothes before. And so I really do understand what quality is. And actually, you know, my dad's side of the family, there was apparel manufacturing as well. So it's something that I'm a few generations away from, but it was close enough that I did feel there was enough of an influence growing up that I understood how it worked. I understood what I had appreciation for high quality manufacturing and garment construction, and I was raised to buy a small amount of beautiful things rather than a bunch of cheap products. So I always had really nice clothes, but only just a very small assortment. And that's something that just is a value that I've always had and what I've always believed in. So designing from the technical perspective of functionality for professional women, with also an eye for really beautiful tailoring, is what drives my, and then I draw all these out and pick the colors and do the mood boards and everything.
It sounds like so much fun.
A giant mood board over there.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's really fun.
So is a mood board, do you set that up for like a season, or is that more like you're scoping out an entire year with all the seasons?
It's really twice a year, I think we do it. So for spring, summer, for fall, winter. So right now we're working on fall, winter. My retail store is downstairs, and it's a great kind of, I call it an incubator for our products. And it's kind of comes out of what we're feeling with our customers, what people want, what people need. And, the mood board that I made for fall, you can kind of see it. It's a lot of, I don't know, I guess it has this kind of self-care vibe. There's a giant fluffy poodle that
I was holding. I love that. And self-care. That's so important.
A little bit. It's a lot. And there's a girl lying on this beautiful like bed of flowers, just like relaxing with these beautiful layers of textured fabric all around her. So it's capturing the lifestyle and the feeling of what the next collection is. And it's a lot of kind of like cozy, take care of yourself, look sharp and put together and stylish, but also it has this feeling of comfort to it. Uh-huh. So the mood board is kind of like, what's the feeling of this upcoming collection? And it's reflective of the world and what the environment is and what our customers need. And I feel like everyone needs a little bit of that right now. Like, we're all running a million miles a minute. And we need to take a pause and take care of ourselves and have clothing that helps us and that feels good, that is structured, but also like cozy not so structured that it's like doesn't have a lot of give to it. So that's kind of the vibe of our upcoming collection, clothes that are very wearable and also reflective of how the workplace is becoming a little more casual. So while we started with very structured suiting, we were kind of easing into more knitwear and things like that. Kind of expanding our base of novelty fabrics, and kind of moving away from, we still have basic core suiting that we need for those very corporate environments.
But it's nice that you're offering different choices. And, you know, we talk a lot about self-care, and that goes, so self-care isn't just something you do and then you go back to work, back to the grind, back to suiting up and feeling uncomfortable. Self-care means you're opening up and being present and feeling good. You would want your clothing, right, to reflect all the self-care and to be a part of self-care. So I find that fascinating. And I also love that you were able to have the more structured and move into the flexible and the fabrics that are different. Giving that choice is so important. Nora, it you know, I've been online. I have seen your designs. They're absolutely beautiful. So I see the success. And you have a Manhattan store. If I'm correct, you're on Madison Avenue, right?
Right off Madison.
Okay, so even if you're close to Madison Avenue, that's really very good.
Madison Avenue.
Okay.
So we're on 58th Street between Park and Madison. So we're right off the corner, but yeah.
So that says success. You have had success, you know, from your background of appreciating quality and the influence of grandmothers. It's really interesting what you've done for yourself. So one of the things that women worldwide, our network loves, is when our guests are able to share challenges. So what do you think? What's maybe a challenge or two, and how did you overcome it?
So many challenges. I love that part of the business because every day there's a new challenge. I think for this business, the biggest challenge, that the learning curve that I have kind of most recently feel like we've almost mastered at this point is, gosh, there's so many, but, you know, merchandising and inventory management, I would say probably inventory management is the big one. And this ties into sustainability a little bit as well. I've felt very strongly that there's too much product mm-hmm. out there in the world. People are trying to move into more sustainable manufacturing, supply chain models. And this, you know, inventory is something that is such a challenge because you never know what will suddenly start selling or when. Mm-hmm. And you launch a new product and it sells out and you wish you had more, you could have sold more, you really believed in something else for whatever reason, everyone opted for the other product or there was something else similar in the market. And you can't always know these things. You're constantly taking bets on inventory. So what we've moved towards is a model where we're doing very limited runs and we're doing more novelty fabric. So we'll make 30 pieces of something and then it's gone. No one else will have that garment. Again, it makes it a little bit more special.
Yeah, that's almost exclusive.
Yeah. It's a special piece that a limited edition, only 30 items exist in the world. We'll never make it again. And when those sell out, you know, then there's less waste because we know that those sold out. And then because we're doing such a small batch, it does cost us more to make. So it drove our price point up a little bit more. But then that made this Madison Avenue store make more sense for our brand. So that was a pivot that I did. I said, okay, I think, you know, we don't want to be doing this mass production. We want to do smaller production, which means higher price point, but that makes our whole brand look different. It's a model that works for our customers and our customers actually like that. It makes it special. So
that's a win-win that you can scale back. There's less waste, but yet your customers like the model as well. That's so important.
So that was one. And then another project we're working on is more customization and on-demand manufacturing. So if people see, you know, we have a set of products and if you want something made in a special fabric or you're petite or tall or you don't fit into standard measurements, and this is another kind of hot topic along with sustainability, is what is fit? Forcing people to be a industry standard size 6 or size 8 right. doesn't work for most people.
And can you do this online, Nora? Can you get this kind of customization online, or is this something where you have to come into the store?
There were both.
Ooh, did I tap into something that? Wow, that's
So right now we're piloting this in the store. So it's something you can definitely reach out to us and learn more about. But I think this focus on sustainability and the anti-fast fashion is something that I'm very focused on, and it's a big challenge and it's industry-wide challenge. So it's a worldwide challenge that I sort of am entering into this conversation coming from a pretty with a pretty strong opinion on it, that it can also destroy a brand. I mean, it's one of the first things that wipes out a brand is you have the wrong inventory. Wrong inventory, too much inventory at the wrong time, and you're done. And then what happens to all that product? Right. It's hugely, hugely wasteful. And ends up in landfills or people burn it. You know, human beings made that. Work put in a full day's worth of work to make that, whether it was in New York City or in India or wherever. And so I think if we can wrap our minds around a new way of manufacturing, maybe not need everything immediately, sort of be more planful about what you're buying and buy fewer things.
It's getting closer to the people you're serving. So that's a lesson for all of you Women Worldwide listeners or people watching us right now. It is about understanding your customer, because, Nora, I think that's where you can really kind of know where to scale back and see the trends and deliver, but yet be more less waste and more effective.
Yeah, I think so. I think we are definitely committed to, you know, innovating and creating a more sustainable brand that's not contributing to the problems we have in the apparel industry.
I love that. That is awesome. Nora, I'm going to ask you just to hold your thoughts for a second, because I want to shift our focus over to something that I've been working on and really focused on, which is leadership and emotional intelligence and empathy. And I think I've shared with you and the Women Worldwide audience that I've embarked on a 52 plus week research passion project, really interested in millennials and how they're showing up to their conversations, how they want to be valued, and how they want others to interact with them, especially in communication. And this all started after my stepdaughter, Noelle, passed away. I had so many questions, so I figured, why not ask millennials? And, you know, millennials have helped me build this model called FEEL, and it stands for Face Fears, Engage with Empathy, Use Ethics and Good Judgment, and Unleash the Love. And the second E, or actually, the first E is the empathy part. So before I share where audiences can go to literally take a test to see how much they feel and how much empathy they have, I want to ask you a question. How are you bringing emotional intelligence into the work that you're doing to help you build relationships?
I think, a business is really, is relationships are everything. Your company is your people. Without your customers, you don't have a business. Without your suppliers, you don't have a product. And you're spending all day with everyone. And the way that you treat your staff and your suppliers and everyone really sets the tone for the culture of your organization and your brand. And I think emotional intelligence is a hugely, I think it's a huge area where, I think a lot of small business owners might not realize the importance of that when you get stressed about paying your bills or growing your business. And you can let that fear and anxiety sabotage everything you have going for you if you don't put that first and taking care of yourself first, and allows you to put a better version of yourself forward. So I think that's something that I have learned over the past 7 years doing this, that if you're overworking yourself and you're spreading yourself too thin, it is very detrimental to your emotional intelligence. That's my wisdom that I can say that I've learned. And as I've started to kind of focus on taking care of myself, then I can be a better leader and a better partner. And something that I've seen over the past year, as I've really tried to work on that part of my business, and it's really a lot of it comes from, I guess, like fear and anxiety. It can cloud your ability to be the person that you're trying to be to everyone else. And
that dictates emotions. I mean,
right.
Emotional intelligence is the ability to sort of work on your own emotions, to be able to recognize others, and the stress and anxiety just completely blocks from that.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's something that I think a lot of small business owners really struggle with, because it's hard when you're building your dream and you have a lot on the line, you have everything on the line. How do you not let that, how do you control that? How do you keep that? How do you stay calm and keep a team motivated when you're facing something that seems incredibly terrifying? And how do you just power through and then put on a good face and lead the team and not panic and things like that? But it's so critical that's what leadership is, right? I read some quote, which is like, leadership is not showing your panic or something like that. But it, treating everyone with kindness and empathy and pretending that putting yourself in their shoes, seeing things from other people's perspective and understanding your role in everything. So say you gave instructions and it didn't go, the plan was not followed the way that you intended it to go, then taking a look at what the instructions were that you gave to the person and realizing they weren't really entirely clear. Little things like that. And you start building muscle memory on how you're everything down to like the tone that you use with people. These kind of very, very micro things that overall build to a culture and build relationships. And I think the most important, like the best advice I can give is just pause for a second. And put yourself in the other person's shoes and think about what kind of, leader or partner would you like to have? And then seeing your role where things go awry, what was your role in it? And see how you can improve. And nothing has to happen immediately. It takes time. Problems aren't going to be solved that day. I mean, a good entrepreneur, business owner loves solving problems, but nothing will happen that same day.
It takes time, because it also takes trust.
And you can't do it alone.
No. Takes two or three or an organization.
Yeah. And you have to be able, and you have to forget that idea that you're going to be doing this alone, that you need a team. And I think picking the right team is obviously important, but even if you do pick the right team, you absolutely have to have empathy. You have to have a ton of gratitude. You have to be humble. You have to show appreciation. You have to give clear communication and instructions and have a plan and, compare your progress according to that plan and make sure. I mean, I can go on and on, but I think it comes down to you still have to take care of yourself first, and you can't spread yourself too thin.
Absolutely.
If you push yourself too much, you won't be able to be that empathetic leader that you need to be to build an organization.
Well, thank you. I mean, that is so true. It's if we don't take care of ourselves, which goes back to the self-care, which you talked about before, which is...
I'm big on lately.
Yeah, I mean, it has to be a part right down to your clothing. But I really, really like that you pointed out the small business and how important the empathy and the emotional intelligence is there. And I have a feeling, Nora, you're going to do really well on this test. So Nora and everybody who is watching or listening to Women Worldwide, you can go to feelfirsttest.com and take this test. You can evaluate yourself and assess how well you do in each part of the acronym FEEL. And remember, E is empathy. So there's a section on empathy. And you know what? Let me know how you do. I hope you take the test, feelfirsttest.com, so that you can then try some exercises. The test recommends exercises that you can do to increase your level of FEEL. So, Nora, thank you for answering that question. And I do want to jump back into our other discussion. So you mentioned culture and just want to, and the people around you. Maybe you could share a little bit about how you select the people who you work with at your business and why, and what makes up your culture.
I have an awesome team. they are, some started as interns, that were promoted, and, you know, I had specific skill sets that I needed, that's for sure. And I wanted to bring people in that could do things better than I could. And it doesn't necessarily even mean, you know, there are things like digital marketing or technical design, which have very specific skill sets. So I looked for people with that specific skill set, that matched our culture. And what I look for is a positive kind of can-do attitude and this problem-solving mentality. I have this question that I always ask in every interview, which is if you're trying to print something and the printer's out of paper, what do you do? And it sounds like a really obvious answer, but I'd go buy, find paper, or if there wasn't any paper, I'd go buy the paper or find a way to get the paper. But it's really, you know, when you're faced with a challenge, how do you deal with that? So being
able to, what are the steps? Yep.
Get to that. And one, if you're a person, that's great for a small company. I think that's critical. And everyone appreciates that here. And I would say everyone has a very positive attitude. And I think that's what's needed in a small company. It's like, all right, we're gonna solve it. We're gonna find a solution. We're gonna make this happen.
Roll up your sleeves, right? Like, roll up your sleeves, get it done. We can do this.
Yep. And you know. And willingness to learn and try new things, and not so set in any way that enjoys the challenge of it, sees it as fun because it is fun. And when you solve the problems, it's really exciting, and you kind of crack the code on something, and we celebrate those moments, and we take a second and do have fun. And so someone who really kind of enjoys that challenge and if you're doing well, you can have an expanded role. And what's great about working here also is like you can transition because we're growing. So someone who has some flexibility. But overall it's that positive kind of problem solving mentality that really is what I look for.
I love it. So tell me something. Do you find yourself, I mean, I could probably tell that when you made the transition, started your business as a fashion designer, it's stepping out of your comfort zone, so to speak, because it is a big switch. Do you find now that you're stepping out of your comfort zone, or is it, I've got this, I'm good? Like, do you still challenge yourself, or does it come naturally?
I don't even know what comes naturally these days, but, I believe you can never become complacent and just say, this is good. We're set. We'll just kind of
from now on out.
Like, that is not the reality of this small business or being a business owner. The bigger we get, the more I'm challenged and the more I have to learn. There was definitely a big learning curve with manufacturing garments and production and merchandising and inventory management and logistics. I mean, I'd never done that before. So now I know how to make garments very well.
That's exciting.
I've learned that. I have a confidence in the process and every stage, you know, it goes from the sketch to mass production. Like I know all of the ins and outs of that. So that was the huge learning curve that I needed to get up. And once that mountain was climbed, so then it's like, how do you distribute? So then we learned digital marketing, learned retail store, wholesale. And now we're pivoting into solving the sustainability problem. There will always be a new challenge. There's always going, you know, in order to grow, you know, we are looking into doing outerwear next. And partnering with other companies to do accessories. You know, growth is that's what's exciting about it. So I will always keep challenging myself and finding new ways to grow the company and serve our customers' needs better. And their needs will be changing. So things are becoming professional.
You'll be stepping out again.
And as we grow, we'll be hiring more people and expanding our office. And, you know, there will be bigger challenges down the road, I'm sure. So then that's what I love about it.
Something tells me all of this motivates you, though, because within every challenge is this unique problem that you get to solve. And that's a part of your brand from the get-go, which is awesome. It's just such a great attitude, because when a leader, when the head of the company feels that way, that's what trickles down to everybody else. So it's not like you're saying, oh my gosh, can't solve this problem, you go figure it out. You're like, no, we're going to take this on.
And bring it on.
Bring it on. And then everybody, yeah. Right? That is awesome. Nora, you're not going to believe this, but we're getting to the end of our discussion. So I guess to round it all up, maybe you could just share some advice with our listeners and folks who are watching. What would you say to folks who want to take that step, want to take that leap to go from left to right, or maybe even right to left, or to use both? What advice would you give to them?
I think that you will know what your ratio is. I think everyone knows like how much creativity they have, and what their analytical side is, and that there's a good career for you within that mm-hmm. scale, wherever you fall. You know, I feel like I'm split 50-50, so it's really, I've had to build a career to suit kind of how I think best. And that's why this particular business works for me. But if you feel unhappy in your current role, or that you want to make a change, I would say, you know, I would say absolutely go for it. That's kind of a vague answer, but I'm so happy that I made this change, and it allows me to use that creativity and the analytics together. And I've built this career that I enjoy every single day. I love doing this. So, and I'm really happy, and my life looks very different than it did 10 years ago. Completely different, but I'm so happy and I absolutely love it. So, you know, I think if you know that something's missing in your day to day, then make a change.
Well, you've certainly found your sweet spot, and I am so happy for you. And I will make it to your store.
I know. We have to do a session together.
Oh my gosh. I would love that. Love it. So, Nora, thank you so much for coming on the show, for sharing all of the amazing ways that you are helping women with their fashion to feel good and comfortable and to be sustainable, and for sharing really, really good advice. So thank you.
Hope it was helpful. Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. It was very helpful. And thank you to all of you for tuning in to Women Worldwide. And you know that we love to hear your feedback. So you can tweet to us. I'm at Dee Breckenridge on Twitter. Please subscribe to the YouTube channel, Deirdre Breckenridge. You can comment there. You can also sign up for updates at womenworldwideshow.com. Okay, friends, until our next episode, stay focused, energized, and feeling empowered. Thank you.